Hi, everybody. My name is Angie, and I am an alcoholic. And thank you, Billy, for asking me to come here tonight and share my experience, strength, and hope. I hope that I can do that. In a general way, I'd like to tell you what it was like, what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And my sobriety date is May the 5th, 2004. And I do have a home group. It's a Bonaire Big Book group in Richmond on Huguenot Road. It's on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. I got sober in a Big Book group up in Kilmarnock in the Northern Neck. And it kind of reminds me to come out here a little bit more, you know, rural area. I love it. I am sponsored, and my sponsor is sponsored. And I believe in sponsorship so strongly. I got a sponsor pretty early myself, and she got me started in service real early and took me to conferences. And what a wonderful lady, and really helped me, I believe, save my life. So I love sponsorship, love Alcoholics Anonymous. Glad to be here. What I was like, I remember as very early, actually I have seen pictures of myself when I was like 5 or 6, and I was pretty much an irritable, grumpy little 5-year-old. You know, and was not getting my way pretty early on and pretty uptight about it. I had a good, you know, family life pretty much. Started out mom and dad, and, you know, had everything I needed and wanted. My folks did divorce when I was 6. I don't think that had anything to do with my alcoholism. It certainly, you know, was tough, but there was a lot of kids, I believe, that also went through that, and so I was not unique in that. I have two older siblings, a brother and a sister, and then I have a younger sibling also that came along about 4 years after me. So I was a baby for 4 years, and then my little sister came along, so a little resentment there. But after my folks got divorced, actually going back and look at those pictures of me, I was in ballet at like 6 years old. My older sister was also. And everything my older sister did, I got to do a little bit, you know, ahead, because she was already doing it, or my brother was doing something. So when my parents started struggling and having trouble with their marriage, they stopped us going to ballet, and I got very angry. And so at 5 or 6 years old, remembering how, you know, I wasn't getting what I wanted, I wasn't getting my way. And but anyway, we moved around a lot after my folks divorced. My mom moved. We moved to Charleston. She was trying to better her life as a single mom with 4 kids. And we moved to Charleston, South Carolina. Then we moved to Springfield, Virginia. And then we moved, I think we moved 2 places. I know we moved 2 places in South Carolina. Then Springfield. Then we moved to Tampa, Florida. And then we moved another time in Florida. And so I moved around a lot. I went, like, first grade all the way up through until I got into the 7th and 8th grade together. I went to a different school every year. So that was kind of rough, too, you know, making new friends. And I was tall for my age and, you know, being pole, so I was bigger than the, you know, young men, and I was big buck teeth and gangly, and I had a rough time. Yeah, I can remember. And my mom used to keep our hair cut real short because she couldn't deal with, you know, braiding and messing with 3 little girls' hair. And I can remember opening the door for some little old lady and her saying, "Thank you, young man," and, you know, once again, another resentment. And, you know, it just, I looked like a little boy, and that's okay. But we were, let's see, where else did we? We moved to Florida. The second place we moved in Florida is where we kind of settled in. My mom bought a house on a lake, and at this time she had she went back to school. She was a nurse, but she went back to school to get her nurse anesthetist licensing. And so, you know, she did well, and we had a house on the lake and a boat, and a big shop where the guy that she bought the house from used to make pool tables. So he taught her. My mom was real handy, real crafty, and he taught her how to make pool tables. And I can remember being in that shop, you know, and so I must have been 12 or 13 right around in there. And by this time, my older brother was starting to get into some drinking and other stuff. Well, he used to huff gas. He used to huff glue. He used to whatever, all kinds of stuff. But, you know, he started bringing stuff home. And drugs is part of my story, so I know it's out of our tradition, but it's definitely part of my story. I tried everything. But anyway, he brought home pot. And my mom, very liberal, and said, all right, if you're going to try that, then try it here in the house, and I'm going to try it with you. And so, you know, very interesting household. I mean, you know, here we are sitting around the kitchen table with my mom, you know, bongs, and grandma would come in, and we'd say, oh, it's a vase, you know. And, but, so it was interesting. My two older siblings, you know, started a party, and like I said, my older sister got to shave her legs. I got to shave my legs. She got to wear makeup. I got to wear makeup. So I started doing things pretty early. And before that even, I can remember feeling uncomfortable, you know, going into new schools, like I said, a new school every year. And my mom would bag our lunch because didn't want to spend the money, I guess, probably, you know, would rather us have different things. So I was embarrassed by taking my lunch to school. And so I used to steal money out of my mom's purse and out of my grandmother's purse so I could take my lunch, I mean, buy my lunch, because I didn't fit in with all the other kids. And so I started stealing, you know, early. And I think my mom, I know she did, she even took me to a psychologist at one point. You know, you're stealing, you know, just. And she tried a lot of things with me. I was definitely, my brother took some of the heat off because he was pretty out there and pretty crazy. But I also had a lot of things going on. So I know that, you know, from early on, I felt really uncomfortable, didn't fit in with, you know, the kids, really didn't fit in with my family. You know, was pissed off because my little sister came along, you know, so that was one thing. And then my two older siblings, my brother got a car, and then my sister got a car, and then my mom ran out of money, so I didn't get a car. So, you know, I was that middle kid that had a lot of, you know, stuff going on. So I definitely smoked pot before I had any alcohol. I know that, and I smoked cigarettes a little bit here and there, butts, you know. And I think it was the very first time that I did get drunk, and I was drinking Mad Dog 2020, and you know, disgusting. I can remember thinking I was real cool, you know, and I actually had a boyfriend, you know, and I'm like, I think I was 14, maybe in the summer between 14 and 15, right around in there. And the boyfriend, you know, basically, here, you know, try this. And I blacked out, I know, the first time. The first time I got drunk, blacked out. Also, it was the first time I had sex, and I actually got pregnant and had to have an abortion and give up that baby. And I tell that because I hope at some point it helps somebody else out there. it, you know, one more thing to add to my list of why I suck and why, you know, I'm different and why, you know, I got to drink and drug and do everything to push all that down. You know, more bad self-esteem, more stuff, you know, that's wrong with me. And for years, that's what I tried to do, was find out what was wrong with me. So my mom, I came home and I told my mom, well, I getting ready to go to school one morning and, you know, barfed on, you know, and I'm not sick, so it was, you know, I was pregnant. And so my mom, being a nurse and being very, you know, in the medical field, is like, we'll take care of that, you know. And I really think I had a resentment of my mom for a long time for being, in control. But she was my mom, of course, but, and I placed myself in that position. Of, you know, I was out there. Nobody was making me drink. Nobody was making me do the drugs. And my mom did what she knew to do best. And that's, you know, at a 15-year-old young lady, you know, that's what she knew to do. So that's what we did. I know that, you know, can really weighed heavy on my shoulders, of course. You know, there's a great speaker out there that talks about, you know, there's, I'm sure, lots of people that have either hit somebody with a car or done some, you know, awful damage or killed somebody or something, and that, to me, just, you know, in 3 years sobriety, some stuff has started to come clear for me, and that, you know, that's what I did. I took a life, and I actually haven't even told this in my story before, but down the road, like at 19, I got pregnant again and had another abortion. And for me, you know, I was out of control. At that time, I was living with a guy, did not have a vehicle, was doing lots of drugs and drinking, gave up my job because of the guy, gave up everything, and ended up, you know, once again, just like, a mess, you know, missed taking birth control pills and got myself in that situation again. And again, I called my mom, and my mom came to the rescue. And, you know, that time we went to the doctors, and my mom and I had discussed it. It was like, let's keep the baby. We'll raise it together. And went to the doctor, and the doctor said, you know, you've been on birth control, you've been doing drugs, I don't think it's a good idea. And so, you know, I actually went into the hospital to have that abortion, and that was a very dramatic and, you know, awful experience. Came out of that and went and lived with my mom and went back to college, or started college. Started to try to clean up my act a little bit as best I knew how. Excuse me. Started going, you know, to therapy and different things to, you know, try to ease some of the pressure on my brain and heart. And so I was about 20... somewhere around 20-ish, and we'll see. I was working. I was going to college part-time. I did not have a car, so I remember riding a bicycle to get where I needed to go. But I was slowly starting to, you know, at least my mom was trying to get me to try different things like IT. She wanted me to get into something technical because I have a brain. It works, and it works pretty darn well. But, you know, everything I would try, I would stop. And just could never complete anything. Out of high school, I picked some odd careers. I was a cabinet. I worked for a guy that did some woodworking. My mom hurt her back at one point, and we had a little family business doing these Cypress clocks. It was big back in the 70s. Then I went to work at high school in a cabinet shop, and I was a laminator. I laminated countertops and the whole works and did hardware. And from there, that's what I did. I could make money. I was starting to pay my own way. And I backed up a little, sorry. But, you know, making money was more important to me than going to college. You know, I was chasing men. That was my life, you know, whatever, guys. And I got to back up just a little bit because this is kind of funny. I stole my sister's birth certificate out of my mom's file cabinet and went and had me a driver's license made when I was like 16. Driver's license made when I was like 15 so I can get in the bars. So I was early in the bars. But anyway, so 20, 21, 22, I was living with mom, going to college part-time, working. Got a car. And we lived out at the beach, so, you know, I was cool, thought everything was going really well. Met a guy, and, you know, for me, it's, I fall right in. You know, there's not the, you know, dating and, you know, getting to know somebody. I get in a relationship and I'm in. And, he drank like I drank and partied like I partied, and we became very good drinking buddies and, you know, fell in love, you know, got married. I actually asked him to marry me because I, you know, got tired of waiting, I guess. And it's like, when are we going to get married? And we had bought a house together and had a business together before we ever got married. And so I was married to this guy for 10 years, and we drank every day. You know, we had our own business, so we would, you know, this is when I started to really get heavy into drinking every day. And we both started to kind of back off the drugs, but drinking then was prominent. And, you know, I hear people say that they hide their recycle containers, you know, because they had too many, or they'd take their recyclables to somewhere else to get rid of them. We were proud of our recycling business. You know, big, huge, gallon-sized Jack Daniels. And, you know, I mean, we would go through a lot of alcohol on the weekends and during the week. We'd drink when we got home from work, you know, 4, 4:30, start drinking beer, you know, wine with dinner, and then hard liquor after that. And I drank, you know, every day. And it's so funny because of, you know, I drank for 25 years, and that, you know, again, as you get more sober, things start to come to mind, and it's just amazing. I drank for 25 years, you know. I don't feel that old, but I am. And you know how I truly believe that, you know, and I've heard a lot of people say, and I believe this is true for me. When I started drinking and drugging, my maturity stopped. And so, you know, when I got sober, I was 42 and, you know, working with about a 16, 17-year-old maturity level, you know. And so I've been trying to catch up, but, you know, I got a ways to go yet. But anyway, we drank a lot. We would have, you know, a lot of friends and parties, and we had a boat and, you know, boat drinks. We'd go out, and I used to think I never had a morning drink, and, of course, some more clarity. We'd go camp overnight in a boat, and the first thing, you know, Saturday morning, we'd mix a big old Bloody Mary. And that's not a drink in the morning. That's a Bloody Mary, you know. Well, you know, we hot sauced them up in Worcester and, you know, a lot of vodka, and I drank, you know, from the morning to the, you know, into the night. And, you know, alcohol, I'm kind of small framed in it and made me sick a lot. So, you know, that's why I hung on to smoking pot a little bit. I could drink a little bit more and, you know, some other substances here and there because it helped me to be able to drink more. But we drank, man, and I started to get physically sick, and I started to get, no, I was, you know, spiritually sick and emotionally sick and immature and, you know, in this relationship for the wrong reasons. I have, you know, it's just what do you do? You know, you get married. I'm 23. You know, it was time. And so, you know, we had a pretty good time for about 5 years. And the last about 5 years in my relationship, in that marriage, you know, I was trying to figure out what was wrong with me, what was wrong with him. And I pretty much decided I wanted to get out of the relationship. That we'd stop drinking for about, I asked him if he would stop drinking. Was alcohol our problem? I don't know. We'll stop drinking. And we both stopped for 30 days. And we weren't alcoholic because we, you know, could stop for 30 days. So we, you know, but day 31, you know, we were right back on it. And, but it started bothering me. I started to run and do physical, you know, exercise and start to get into that kind of thing. And I couldn't drink as much and do what I wanted to do that way. And I still at that time, I didn't know alcohol was, you know, was really what was going on and what was my problem. I thought my relationship was my problem. You know, I was my problem. My family was my problem. You know, and I started to go to therapists to see if I was going to go through this with this divorce or not. And I remember sitting in one therapist's office, and I pretty honestly told her how much I drank. You know, 30 drinks a week, you know, 5 drinks a day, which is still probably not exactly the truth, but she knew I drank a lot, you know, she could see that. So at one point, we're sitting in the therapist's office, and she points to an empty chair, and she says to me that King Alcohol is in that chair, and she wanted me to talk to him and tell him how I felt. And I thought, my God, she's crazier than I am, you know. But I think she's a therapist because I went through a bunch of them that told me to go to try an AA meeting. And I was, you know, we had, my ex-husband and I had this business for 8-9 years. You know, I was a young professional. I thought I was somebody. And so I started going to, I went to a couple of young professional AA in Florida. They have, you know, just like we have here lots. But that was interesting. And I, you know, I just could not relate to these people at all. And I, because I, you know, was on the inside, I didn't feel like a young professional. You know, I could dress the part. I could, you know, go to the networking meetings and do what I needed to do for my business. But on the inside, I did not fit with any group of people, really. You know, these professionals, anybody. And so I didn't stick in, you know, I mean, I basically didn't go. I didn't pay attention. I went to 2 meetings, I think, and just hadn't, you know, wasn't for me. Had nothing for me. Maybe my ex-husband needed it, but, you know, but I didn't. I did go through with a divorce, and, you know, it's one of the people that I'm not able to make an amends to because he remarried. But, thinking back, you know, to that time, I, made us sell our home, we had a piece of property that we were going to build a home on, sell our business, sell everything, get rid of everything. And he was a very nice man. He split everything with me down the middle. I am a very fortunate person to have been in that situation. But as sick as I was, I didn't know what to do with that money or myself. And I was a mess. And I told people I was semi-retired, and I didn't work for 2 years. And at one point, I mean, I just spent that money that I had, and I gave away a lot of money, and I went to a lot of therapy, and I was on antidepressants. I spent a lot of money on that. And I know that's controversial for some people, but that's part of my story, too. I was on them, I got off of them, and I feel much better, and I'm happy about that. I don't think that's for everybody, but it was for me. But I spent a lot of money. You know, as I said, I went to lots of therapists. I went to psychiatrists trying to find out what was wrong with me. I went to acupuncturists, you know. I tried all kinds of stuff. I even took my dog to an acupuncturist. No, I didn't. Which for another issue. But I, you know, I quit drinking for a while. I got into this other relationship. I don't know if I quit drinking before or not, but I got into a relationship pretty soon after I was divorced. Actually, before I got divorced, I had an affair. You know, I was done with my husband, so in my mind, it was not an affair. You know, today, I know that it was an affair, and I add to the list of stuff that I heard, you know, that my, that person was. But I got into, you know, that was like a six-month relationship that at the end of that relationship, I lost it. And today I know that I didn't grieve my marriage. I, you know, that's when I grieved my marriage, when I got out of that relationship. Somewhere in there, you know, I was, again, living at the beach, high on the hog. You know, I'm semi-retired. I think I'm somebody, you know, big old ego, big old pride. I got money, but I remember one night I had drank a whole bottle of wine, and I was pretty popped, and I was called my sister, and was my youngest sister, and she is a person that's like one of these wise old souls. Anybody know any of those? Sometimes things come out of her mouth, you know, and you go, wow. She is, she's just a wise old soul, and I called her and I said, I was living by myself. I'm like, I'm going to go buy another bottle of wine. I can go buy another bottle of wine and I can drink as much as I want. And nobody cares and nobody knows but me. And so I was, you know, reaching out for help. I was asking. I knew the alcohol at that point. Somehow I knew, you know, that was a, that was what was going on. And it wasn't that time that she told me to go to AA, but she helped me through that time period. And I think I, at that point, I stopped drinking on my own. And I got into this other relationship I was talking about that was abusive. Not the first time I'd been in an abusive relationship by any means, but it's kind of like I went back to some old behavior. And not drinking, not drugging, not doing anything, you know, and they say that we're crazy. I was crazy. That's where I, you know, let people, you know, harm me. I gave away, you know, large sums of money, just signed quick claim deed and did, you know, insane stuff and stayed in this relationship and, got to a pretty low bottom, and I decided to move out of Florida, leave all my exes in Texas, if you will, in Florida, and my younger sister moved up to Virginia, and she had the only grandchildren, two kids, and my mom had retired, and she moved up to Virginia to be near the grandkids, and once again, I need bailing out, so I go to my mom. So at, you know, 42 years old, I move back in with my mom. And, you know, today I know that, you know, I needed help, and I didn't know where else to go, and I'm very grateful for my mom being there to be able to help me, and she did. My mom and I went to some Al-Anon meetings for my brother. And I can remember going to a few of those, you know, so I was just still in denial about, you know, what was going on with me. But, you know, I learned a little bit of here and there. Oh, I got to step back just another minute. That abusive relationship that I got in when I wasn't drinking, I haven't gone to those two AA meetings way back when. One of the things I heard was amends and, you know, you should make amends. And so I took, you know, those pieces of what I wanted. Or I had some literature, who knows where I got it from. But at one point I had broken up with that guy, And I thought, well, I'm going to call him and make an amends to him, and end up getting back in relationship with this guy because I was, you know, doing that insanity. But anyway, I moved up to Virginia, packed all my stuff. Oh, I got a funny little story with that. I do have a dog, Golden Retriever, and she's, you know, she's my little angel. But when I was getting ready to move to Virginia, I had my Jeep on a trailer on the back of a big U-Haul, and I was saying goodbye to everybody. And I had some tranquilizers for my dog because she doesn't ride well in a car. And I had them in this pocket, and I had my vitamins and all my goodies in this pocket. And I took the dog tranquilizers by accident before I left Florida. Well, before I left my sister's, and ended up having to delay my trip for... It was pretty funny, though, but... I just slept for a day. And anyway, so drove up here, live with Mom. You know, I'm a mess. I'm pitiful. I'm a victim. I'm, you know, I work part-time. I kind of do what I want to do. I'm paying my mom a little rent by cleaning house for a little bit, maybe. And I'm drinking. And I start dating a bartender in a little tiny town of Lively where my mom lives, which I now call Deadly. But anyway, the bartender, you know, I'd never dated a bartender. That was pretty slick, actually. Now that, you know, I look back, it was good. He would not let me buy drinks, so it was good. But I, you know, hung out with him all the wrong reasons, and, you know, I drank myself silly at that time. I really think it progressed in a very, very short time for me. I think I could, you know, I stepped over that line. I could handle alcohol and, you know, but at stopping for that period of time and then starting back up again, it progressed. It was definitely, as they say, doing push-ups in the parking lot. And when I started drinking again, I could drink more than I ever had been able to hold, you know, without any drugs or anything. I could just drink more, and I wanted more, and I needed more, and I'd stop on the way home from work and buy me a six-pack, and, you know, I'd gone through all those, that one chapter in the book where it talks about how we tried the organic wine. I did that. I tried the, you know, everything in that list. I really did. You know, I'd buy strong beer, and I'd be able to drink a whole six-pack, but that wasn't enough, and I used to couldn't drink a whole six-pack. So I'd drink whatever my mom had in the house, her brandy, her wine, whatever. Back to my old, you know, tricks, or continuing my old tricks of stealing, because it wasn't mine. I just said it felt like mine. I'm in the house. It's mine. You know, so I'd take what I wanted. And my last couple drunks, I was sitting in front of my mom's fireplace, because I love to stoke a fire, and drinking, watching TV with my mom, and drinking vodka and grapefruit juice. And, you know, everybody's got their bottom, and I don't know why I think mine is so not that much low bottom or whatever, but for me, it did it, you know, whatever that is. One morning I woke up and my mom said, "Did you know what you did last night?" And I said, "No." And she said, you vomited all over the hearth. And I'm like, "No, I didn't." I mean, I had never really considered any of the blackouts that I had had a real blackout. I didn't know what a blackout was, but I didn't consider it. But that scared me, you know, and it humiliated me and it shamed me to the point. You know, and that happened like one other time. A couple days later, she said, "You know, you were like sliding down the stairs on your stomach." And I'm like, "What?" You know, that was not me. I don't know who it was, but it wasn't me, you know. And, but anyway, you know, I got to the point where I could not, I knew it was alcohol and I couldn't do that anymore. I was hurting my family and I was hurting myself, and I knew it was alcohol. And I called that young little wise sister, and I said, "I don't know what to do. You know, I don't know what to do." And she said, "Why don't you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, okay, I'll do that. So I look up in the phone book, and I make that call, you know, right out of the phone book, and some old codger answers the phone, and I'm like, I think I need to go to a meeting. And he's like, hey, you know what I'm eating, you know. And he, this man, I love this man. His name is Myron. He lives in the Northern Neck, and he's wonderful. Saved my life. One of the things, you know, he said to me, which I to this day is, easy does it. Oh, wait, I gotta say it in his voice. Easy does it, but do it. You know? And I love that because it's so true. But Myron answered the phone and he got me to a meeting. And first meeting I went to, I'm sure I was probably still had a lot of alcohol in my system, and I didn't. You know, I thought this is good. I'm gonna come back. And the next meeting I went to was where I ended up in a home group there that had the pull-down shades with the steps and the traditions on them. And just a warm, you know, group. And not cliche. I mean, for me, I knew it when I got there. I knew that I had found what was wrong with me. Or, you know, this was it. This was home. The people there, you know... I was not an atheist, agnostic, but, you know, I was raised in a Catholic family for, you know, early, and then my mom was kind of liberal, whatever, you know, not really any religion at all. And, but, you know, seeing God, and, you know, and being in a church in our meeting, and, you know, God had not left me. You know, I had left God, and I know if you've heard that, but I really believe that. So I knew I was home when I got to that meeting, and I just kept going back, and I kept hearing, you know, get a sponsor, do the steps. Get a sponsor, keep coming back, do the steps, and I was like, okay. So I started looking. And in this rural area, there wasn't a lot of women with a lot of sobriety. But there was a few, and I had just chanced and gone to this one meeting one day, and there was this lady there, and she was, you know, just warm, and she was, I'm an artist, and she was an artist, and she's a musician, and she was, you know, this, that, and the other, and she was a strong woman, you know, and, you know, it was just God, I'm sure, put her in my life. And I asked her to be my sponsor, and she agreed, and we started going through the book. And I was a treasurer of our home group. We had, like, you know, service position come up, like, pretty quickly after I got sober. And, you know, me and, like, three other people right at that time got sober together, and they voted us in. And we were, like, I was treasurer of my home group. And, you know, to this day, I suck at balancing my checkbook, but I did what I needed to do there, and it helps me today to even think about that and look back and how much I need to still be responsible for those things. I eventually, we had a group that we sponsored. I don't know if that's the right terminology, but our group was on Tuesday nights, and we had a group on Monday night that we, you know, also took care of. And I ended up making coffee and opening that meeting. And on Monday at noon, you know, so I got into service early. Like I said, she took me to conferences, which was unbelievable, you know, because I was one of those people that thought if I gave up drinking and partying, my life was, you know, over. But to see people having fun and laughing, and she used to play the guitar after, you know, at the conferences and sing, and it was just wonderful. So I was... brought up in a real good, you know, AA community there. And we started, like I said, to go through the steps. I knew when I got in there, you know, the steps were pretty mumbo-jumbo to me. But I remember looking at the first step and skipping over the powerlessness and going, my life is unmanageable. You know, I just knew it. You know, I knew... at 42 years old, living with mom, and, you know, not finished college, not, you know, had a divorce, had, you know, just all this stuff. I'm like, yeah, I can definitely grasp unmanageability. I don't think I, you know, knew at the time, but I think somehow, you know, I went past the powerlessness, yeah, and unmanageability is what I could see and what I, you know, hung on to, I guess. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves, could restore us to sanity. You know, that took me a little while to understand and to get, but like I said, God had not left me. I had left God, and it didn't take me, you know, I just saw that this person that I was following was sane and, you know, fun and could, you know, do things and was not, you know, not perfect, but, you know. And I remember sitting in, like I said, she was a musician. She was, she, like, did painting and lawn mowing and all kinds of weird stuff, kind of like me, you know, a little bit, like, a little odd in that area. And we were sitting in her pickup truck at a meeting one day, and she was like, you've got to start to learn how to trust God. And what I got that day right then was, you know, that I could trust her. I had put my trust in another person. And once I did that, it was like, yeah, okay. But I had to trust somebody, and I, you know, before I think I could trust God. And the third step was kind of hard to grasp. I kept saying, I just got to lay down on the ground and die if I'm turning my whole will over. I just could not grasp. You know, what do you mean? I got to give it all up. Okay, I'm laying down. That's it. I'm done. I can't do it, you know. But so it took me that is hard, hard hit. And it took me a long time to really understand that. To make a decision to do that is one of the things that, you know, all I have to do is make a decision. I don't have to do it all today. But for me to have made that decision to turn my will in life. And I do that on a daily basis. One of the things she taught me was right early was to get on my knees in the morning and pray and ask God to help me stay sober today. And in the evening before I went to bed, to thank God for keeping me sober. And I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know who I was praying to. And I didn't care. I just knew that I needed to be doing what she said to do because I wanted what she had, really. I was praying without even knowing what I was praying for or to, and I believe it works. The sponsor had ovarian cancer, was in remission when I met her, but it came back, and I did lose her. She did, you know, we all lost her because she was an amazing, wonderful woman and a great part of our fellowship. But she did pass away, and I was a little over a year sober, and we didn't quite get through the book, but what an amazing experience to be able to be with her. I went and visited her every day, and she was, you know, turning into this skeleton of a person and losing her mind, you know, on a lot of medication. And I'm so grateful today to be able to have been there, you know, and it was amazing when she still was pretty conscious and I would go in and just sit with her sometimes, but I would walk in and she would know I was there and she would crack a joke. She would say something funny. And I knew she's dying, you know. But I did take her sponsor as my sponsor for a while, and you know, then I got a few more sponsors here and there, but finally settled into a sponsor here in Richmond that is wonderful. And I'm one of those people, I call my sponsor every day. She tells me she calls her sponsor every day. And, you know, for a while there, I was like, oh, okay, I'm getting to be a big girl. I don't have to call you every day. And, you know, I think in some parts of me, there was some stuff going on that I didn't really want to share so much with her. So today, you know, I'm really an open book with her. She doesn't run my life at all. She doesn't tell me what to do. She does make suggestions. And she guides me tremendously. It's great. I love having somebody that helps me. And anyway, with my first sponsor, I did do a fourth step. I did do an inventory, and it was pretty thorough. And I read to her this step, and here's this woman that's you know, dying of ovarian cancer, and she'd come to my mom's house and sit with me and read, you know, like 2 days in a row we sat and read. I read to her, and she really helped me. I remember, you know, we did a couple social events together and stuff, and I remember one time we were in a group of people, and I had interrupted her while we were talking, and then I just continued to talk anyway, you know, and she was like, "Don't interrupt me," and then continue to talk. And it was like, smash, man. She really smacked, you know. But that's the, she could do it and then be gracious and loving and caring. And, you know, I don't know how I got off on that. But anyway, I did share my fifth step with her. And it was long and it was, you know, a lot. You know, first person on my list was my mom, you know, and how she had done so many things to me, you know, and it was pretty amazing to see how, you know, how much I had done to her and where I was at, you know, wrong. I was wrong a lot and caused a lot of harm. When I was done, I did just what, you know, I mean, we did the old, you know, put the book up on the shelf, take the book off the shelf, and do that, take that hour and sit and go through. I went through my inventory again and looked at all that, and, you know, I was taught well. It was a good experience. That first fifth step I did and that sixth and seventh, you know, there was not like, I mean, yeah, I felt some things I'd never felt before, understood some things, but, you know, it wasn't the big flashing after the seventh step, you know, no burning bush. Took me a long time to, you know, and, you know, I play a good victim, so I can say that her death and, you know, not having a sponsor and stuff like that, and I did, I stumbled, I took a couple steps back, and I had made my eighth step list, but it took me a while to get to that. Today I'm current on all my amends except for one, which kind of came to me later, as I kind of sobered up, and the, that is a financial amends that I need to do some work on, but, I'm current in the other ones. The first person I made amends to was my mom, and my life changed, I believe, after that amends. Before that, it really changed, but definitely my relationship with my mom is very, very different. But just having come into this program and done that fourth step and fifth step, sixth and seventh step, my life has changed amazingly in different ways. I can't even explain. The tenth step, I'm not very good at, I'll tell you right now. I cut the people I love on a daily basis, and I'm not very good at going back and cleaning that up. I need to do some work in that area. On the other hand, I skip right on over to step 11, and I just love it, and I do that real well. And I do. I love the 11th step, and it's probably one of my favorite steps. And I do it every day. You know, unless my behind's falling off. I've still not completely read the book. First 164 pages, which I find amazing, but it's all right. You know, I'm getting there. I'm still reading with my sponsor. And I've had a couple opportunities to sponsor people. A couple of them are like my sponsor going, "Here, sponsor this person." And those really haven't worked out so well. But, you know, I'm sober, and that's it gave me a little bit of experience, you know, even just sitting down and going, oh, we're supposed to read that much? Oh, I didn't know we were supposed to read the very, very first, you know. So, you know, it's experience, and it takes time. And I'm willing to sponsor. I don't have any sponsees right now, but I know that, you know, and I don't feel like it's sitting on my laurels, but I think that God has plans for me, and that it's in His time. And I have a great sisterhood in my sponsorship family, and we call each other a lot, and I feel that that's a very strong way to give. And I also have a service position. I'm GSR in my home group, and I just took another job on, because when I went to pick up my 3-year chip, they didn't have any medallions, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to, somebody had bowed out of that, now I'm gonna do the books, literature, and so it's good, it'll be good for me. Let's see. So, yeah, I have a service position now in my home group. It is a big book group, like I got sober in, and I love it. And I go to a speaker meeting once a week, and I go to an open discussion, and I just started going to a beginner's group, which also my first home group I got in had a beginner's group, which is awesome. Be able to just be there, you know, and just share a little bit. I'm a pretty shy sharer. You know, I'm getting better. I know, one day at a time. I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to get up here. It's a miracle. It's a miracle that I'm alive, first of all. I know that, because I would have been dead. I would have killed myself. I probably would have taken my own life. And through sponsorship and AA, I'm here and alive today, and I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful to be able to be up here speaking, because y'all, I failed bad in college, the speaking course. Whew, man, I really flunked out. I'm the big old chicken. And I usually speak for about 35 minutes, and then I'm out of here really as fast as I can. But tonight I actually share a little bit. I just thank you all for listening. I appreciate each and every one of you. And again, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you stay with us one day at a time, too. Thank you.